You're listening to the Clear Creek Resources Podcast from Clear Creek Community Church, located in the Bay Area of Houston.
Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to the Clear Creek Resources Podcast. I'm Ryan Layton, and I'm here with Yancey Arrington.
Hey, guys.
So if you're the first time listener to Clear Creek Resources Podcast, our hope is that this podcast helps us to better connect with the people of Clear Creek and continue the conversation beyond our weekly worship services. We have recently started a new message series called Sticky, and over the next 4 weeks, we're going to continue the conversation via our podcast episode. So Yancey's here because he preached this week on faith and politics, and he had a conversation with Rachel Chester about that. So Yancey, tell me a little bit about your conversation with her before we jump in.
Yeah, as you said, all we wanted to do is to really experiment with this series. We were going to just preach these sermons, and as soon as we finish them, as quickly as we could, get into what we call kind of like our green room, which has functionally been our podcast room, and just continue that conversation with an interviewer. So what we did with Rachel Chester is that I just finished preaching on Christianity and politics, walked into a room, and she just wanted to continue that conversation by asking me questions, not only about the sermon, but questions that came to her mind and heart as she listened to what I had to say. And the result is that conversation.
All right, let's get to it.
All right, Yancey, thanks for being here today.
Yep,
it's always fun to sit down and talk about these things, but especially when we're talking about a sticky topic or a difficult conversation, it we all really appreciate it whenever you're willing to do that. So,
well, we'll see how this goes. I know in the intro you told people that this was immediately following my sermon, and so I'd like to think I could continue this conversation, but I don't know how much has left my brain once I finish preaching. So this is an exercise. This is an experiment. We'll see how this works. But I'm grateful to be here. I'm glad that you're here.
Well, anyone who knows you knows that there's lots in your brain. So we'll probably be fine.
Yeah, for good and bad.
Okay, so first question, because we got to just jump in. There's so much.
Please.
We're probably not even going to get through all of it. But first question, so who are you going to vote for in November?
Well, I mean, I thought it was pretty clear. Waylon and Willie, 2020. And I like the Luckenbach philosophy. You know, you've seen those shirts. Have you been to Luckenbach, Texas?
No.
We ought to stop this conversation right now. I mean, never been to Luckenbach.
It's a different podcast.
Okay, sorry. So if you go to Luckenbach, their philosophy is on the back of their shirt, it says, where everybody is somebody. And so I like that. And plus, I just like Willie Nelson. I know Waylon Jennings is dead.
But... for real, who?
For real, who? Oh, I would never tell anybody.
You would never tell? Okay,
no,
so let me ask you, though.
I'll tell you why, though.
Yeah, tell me why.
Because I don't think pastors ought to do that.
Ever? Would there be any moment in history when you would think, okay...
I don't know.
This is the time when I really just have to tell my church. This is who I'm voting for.
Why. Why are you pressing me on this? I just got through preaching. I don't believe, in my mind's eye, living in a democracy... and being a pastor over people from different political persuasions and convictions, and they hold those. I'm gonna think the best. They're holding those with a good conscience. I can't, in good conscience, as a pastor who's trying to represent God's word to his people and the preaching and teaching thereof, I can't ever imagine a situation where I would say you ought to vote for this person or that person ever. Now, again. If I were living in a dictatorship in Nazi Germany in 1945 and Dietrich Bonhoeffer's my best friend and we're going to talk against Adolf Hitler, I could see that and tell our church not to follow this idea that the Jews are the despised people. Yeah, I mean, that's speaking to issues. And I still think you speak to issues. I mean, my gosh, we do. I mean, you know, someone likes to say the church should never be political, but I definitely want you to preach against abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Or the church doesn't need to be political, but I definitely want the church to talk about what's the Bible's view of gender. And I would agree on both of those things, and we have. But those are politically fraught issues. Let's not be naive about it. So, but as far as like, who am I voting for? I would feel like I'm almost abandoning my role as an elder to do that. And I think there's probably a lot of reasons why. First of all, there's a legal reason why a church can't do that.
But a lot of churches do that.
Well, I mean, I have to just let churches do what they want to do. I saw that there was a marquee at a church in our area that said, vote for this specific party if you love Jesus or mm-hmm. they're the right ones. And I just there is no way on the face of this planet that I would ever do that.
Well, let me ask you another question. Do you think God has chosen a side? Is he for somebody in the fall or a group of people?
Man, that's a
or
good
specific
question.
People?
You know, you'd have to ask him, and I'm not trying to be coy. I think God appoints I think God appoints leaders. I think he allows leaders. I'm not into the secret council of God, so I can't tell you which is which. I do think God also, in his sovereign providence, allowed us to live in what's known as a liberal democracy. Now, when I say liberal, I don't want people to think left or right. That's the technical term. It's classic liberalism in the sense that we believe in personal property. We believe in individual rights. That's what that means. So because we live in a quote-unquote liberal democracy, or other people want to say a federal democracy with federal representation, I trust that we live in a land where I'm okay with how people vote. We're going to let them vote. That's what God allows us to live in a nation where that's the process. And so does he have one person? I don't even know that. I know this. I know he knows who's it's going to be. He knows what the people are going to choose, and he's 100% in his prognostications on who's going to be the president and who has been the president. So I don't know about that. I tend to take my cues from what does the kingdom say about different issues than more so what's the one guy. But that's just me personally. I know that ultimately you have to vote for a person. So I think that would mean that you need to vote for a person that you believe best represents what's best for the common good of the people.
So you think you have to think more in terms of the issues and what the people are representing, maybe more than, okay, which one is the one that God has ordained?
I just think, listen, you're assuming that you know a whole lot about how God thinks. And I think there's an arrogance there that you better be very careful of. Well, God surely thinks this. Well, you can read a Bible and figure out with great clarity what God feels about, I believe, what God feels about things like abortion, what he feels about sexuality or justice, poverty. I mean, there's a lot of things that are clear. I think that's what the Bible is very clear on. What I was trying to say in the sermon I just preached seconds ago is that any political party, I don't even think left, right, just, you know, there was the Green Party at one time. Think of the Independent Party, it doesn't matter. Any and every political party, Rachel, has a strategy to try to address those issues. And for the most part, it's on a continuum of what you believe is wiser or not as wise. So, yeah, a person may feel like, I like the way this party approaches helping the poor. I think it's a wiser strategy than this party. Now, I don't think that the Bible says you have to do it one way. First of all, the Old Testament's predominantly about a theocracy in ancient Israel, right? So we don't live in that. We live in a democracy. So we don't have a king. We have a president. We have a Congress. We have a Senate. We have, you know, all these kinds of mechanisms and measures to try to run our government. So I think, and I don't know if this is even what you're asking. Of course, I may not. Let me just remind people again. I just got through preaching a sermon, a very long sermon, by the way, maybe the longest I'd preached, and I don't know, my 20-something years I've been here, so I apologize. But my brain may
still not
be
quite
with
long.
Yeah,
enough.
I'm still, no, believe me, it was too long. But I still think that we so easily polarize the national conversation that mm-hmm. one side's right, one side's wrong. And can't just one side be like, whatever side that you pick, can't you just say to the other side, you know what, I just don't agree with their policies. I just don't think they're the wisest. Instead of saying, theirs is evil. Now, that's not to say there aren't things out there that we would consider evil.
Let me ask you a couple follow-up questions. Let me just stop you for
one please.
Second.
Well, I'll give some clarity to it.
Yeah, so let me ask you just one more personal question first before we start talking about the issues
sure.
and the concepts with
sure.
this. And that is, would you ever vote for someone who is not a Christian, who did not share the same faith
that
you do?
Man, I don't know why you're... I think, let me generalize that. Should some... Yes, I would vote someone who is not a, for an, excuse me, let me re, I would vote for someone, potentially I would vote for someone who's not a Christian over someone who is a Christian if the person who's not a Christian actually holds more values and strategies that I think are best for loving my neighbor as myself. I mean, there are way too many politicians that pull out their Christian card that once they get into the their seat of power, do anything that's, I mean, they do all kinds of things that are hardly considered Christian. So to me, there was a phrase uttered a long time ago. It was attributed to, I think, Augustine. It's not. I don't know who it's from. But it said, I'd rather be ruled by a wise Turk than a foolish Christian. And so I'd rather think through what this person's issues are. Now, in a perfect world, I would love to vote for a Christian who holds and exudes Christian virtues and values and has a vision of the kingdom that he or she thinks will integrate for the good of the civic life. In other words, that she or he is following Jesus's command to love your neighbor as yourself, and they're going to uphold policies that do that, that treat everyone equally, that uphold justice, that show compassion, that show protection. And I would love to vote for me. Yeah, my preference is a believer, but if not, I don't want to put a foolish Christian to represent me. I'd rather have a wise secularist do it, though, you know, those are hard to find. So
there's a couple more questions that come out of that conversation. So tell me this. You're talking about a continuum on wise and unwise policy choices, which is one thing that we need to be looking at. But I think that a lot of people are going to push back on that, that there are some things that are just good and bad.
Okay.
And then the other, I want you to talk about.
And by the way, I don't think that's incorrect. Yeah. I think there probably are some things that are good and bad.
So I want you to speak into that. And then the other thing is this, I think a lot of times in our political culture, that we think of this as a competition between angels and demons. So even outside of the issues, which I want you to talk about, but the people.
Did you write on something like this? But angels and demons, or
I don't think so.
No, I thought I read.
I should maybe.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
So there's the good guys and there's the bad guys,
right?
And so there's both of these concepts. So how do we think about the issues involved? How do we have conviction and still have nuance and talk about these issues? And then how do we think about the people involved as well, the politicians themselves?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm getting your question correctly.
Okay, just tell me first about, are there any issues that really are not on a continuum? This is good and this is bad, and how can we think about that?
Well, it's hard if you read the scriptures to have how abortion is treated on a continuum. I think it's hard. Mm-hmm. Because it just seems, if you look at the scriptures, that's just evil. I'm not talking about a danger of the life of the mother or even incest. I'm talking about, which I understand the majority of abortions to be, are abortions of convenience. Okay, I even hate to say that term, but I believe that's what statistics show. I don't know how you can get around that's just a moral evil. If you look at the scriptures, right? So I think that is a data point, a big one. And yet some people would say that's the only one. I'm not willing to say that because there are a lot of people today that their lives are being ruined by a lot of things that aren't abortion. So something can be evil, and I believe that is. And yet there are other things that people that wake up in the morning, like there are a lot of Americans that wake up in the morning, they're not thinking about the evils of abortion because it doesn't intersect their personal lives. Right or wrong, it doesn't. But maybe some of them struggle in poverty and they don't know where their next meal's coming from. And they don't know, and they're desperate because of whatever city they live in. Because remember, this affects local, state, regional, national. There are all kinds of laws that, and I'm not even trying to point to the national government, just any kind. And their biggest problem is trying to get out of a life in which they think the system is stacked against them. Just so you know, that's moral. That's moral. Mm-hmm. I would argue almost any kind of legislation is moral. And there are some people that are one-issue voters. So they're pro-life, pro-choice. That's how they're going to vote. Okay, that's fine. That's exactly how you're free as an American to do that. There are other people, though, that want to say, listen, there are other issues that are also concerning to me. So there are people out there, Rachel, there are people out there that actually think the environment's being messed up. They believe that corporate greed and oversight has allowed our planet to go south.
That's a creation mandate.
Well, you would think so, but there are a lot of people on some other spectrum, a part of that political spectrum,
to dominate it.
That's not real or it doesn't exist. And I'm not here to say yes or no. All I'm simply saying is there are people that, for them, how the environment is treated, that's their issue. And I would argue, when you look at the scriptures, Genesis 2, it's a moral issue. So that's moral. So now we're getting to the place where it's like, oh, there are multiple moral issues, and that some people feel great convictions about some over the others. I'd like to feel great conviction about all of them. Here's the problem. I think it's hard to find a party that has the right answer for every one of them. Now, there are some friends of mine that think, nope, this one's got it. And just so you know, I have friends on the left and the right. And they're free to think that. Just when I look at the scriptures and I look at the body of legislation out there and what people want to do, the same people that there are parties which I can't stand their views on certain things, that I can respect their views on others. And that's what complicates it all. If you don't want to live in a binary world where one's just right, the other one's just wrong. Someone said this, and it's been said a lot. There's no place for the middle today. That's really true. There are a lot of people and a lot of believers that feel politically homeless. And you may be listening like, nope, I don't feel homeless at all. This is my party. I think great. But there are a lot of people that do, because it's been so polarized that you can only pick one or the other. And it's almost because only one's got the truth and the other one doesn't. And I don't even think that jives with the scripture.
So one thing I want to clarify is that you talk about a continuum of wise and unwise approaches to these issues.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that these aren't moral issues.
Oh,
so
no.
To say that there's not a
poverty
right
is a moral
answer,
issue.
A wrong answer doesn't mean that this isn't a moral issue.
No. Like I said, I think all legislation deals with moral issues ultimately. It's just how do they do it in a wise way or an unwise way? And again, I think it's a strategy. So, for example, when you take poverty, one side says that the federal government, we need to centralize that care more. It needs to be standardized and centralized. That's not right or wrong, in my opinion. That's a strategy. Another group on the other side says, well, no, we don't need the government really getting involved with the relief of poverty. We need we need to have free market solutions for that. Or, you know, if we're going to capitulate to the government, it's going to be state and local. It's not going to be federal. And you could probably guess which groups I'm talking about. I don't think there's a right and wrong. Because the Bible doesn't say which one of those to pick, does it? Nope. And you can make wisdom cases for each one of them. They both have pros and cons. So that's why I think you ought to debate those and figure out for which you think. What does Rachel Chester think is the wisest approach to that issue? What complicates that is now you got to do that for all the other issues. And what unfortunately, most Americans and even a lot of Christians, they don't want to do the work to think through all those things. But that's the kind of work you have to take and choose to have a clear conscience kind of a vote for some people. Other people are like, no, it doesn't matter to me. Again, they've circled the wagon around a certain issue, and I think that's their right to do that.
Can you be a single-issue Christian and still have a nuanced discussion and an open mind about that one issue? Or not?
I don't know if you can be. I mean, how I would nuance that question is, it's hard to be have a nuanced discussion about anything politically if you're a single issue voter.
Okay.
But I do think you can be a single issue voter because you're just so convinced, like, I know that's wrong. I know this party is for that thing and this party's against that thing. So based on that, and because that issue is so important to me, that's just where I'm going to put my chips. I have to tell you, I am not that kind of a person. I have a much more nuanced understanding of that, but I don't mean my understanding is correct. It's just my understanding. I respect people that have that position, but you're going to have a hard time having a conversation about any other political issue. Poverty, should the U.S. mail for, the military, anything, because you've already stuck your flag in the ground for one party because of this one issue. You're right to do that. God bless you. You're an American. You can do that. It's just going to be hard for you to have a conversation with anybody else about anything else that has a different view on other subjects outside of that party. That's all. And again, if that's what people want to do, great. If they don't, though, I mean, if that's what they do have is their position, one deal, one party, one everything, you may have to do some gymnastics mentally as a believer, potentially, on other issues. And there are 1,000 other issues that have moral implications that you've got to work out. Like, well, is my crew always the wisest about that? So that's what you have to wrestle with. I personally come to a place where I don't see that. I see good in both sides. I know we're in a two-party system now. I see good in both sides, and I see bad in both sides. And so then again, I think it comes down to like what issues are most important to you. And I think ultimately it's how most Americans want to vote, is what they know they can't do every issue, so they figure out what issues are most important to them. I think Christians ought to think more instead of what's just most important to me. They also need to think, in addition to that, is what's best for America, what's best for the common good, what's best for loving our neighbor as ourself, what's doing unto others as we would want to do unto them. So we know what those values are of the kingdom, fairness, justice, mercy, compassion, so on and so forth. So then you would think that the question would be like, all right, what legislation or person or party? I don't think you can do it by party, but whatever it is, like, how can I vote in a way where the America that we move toward is one like that?
Mm-hmm.
And not one that moves away from that. And that's the art of the politic. And I would never want to tell people, oh, it's this person, it's that party. I just, going back to your original question, I just think I don't think that's what a pastor should do. But I do think a pastor should stand up there, and the church should stand right in the middle and say, here's what the Bible says about justice and mercy and compassion and love and life. And I think that's the place we need to be and not be scared of it.
So all of these conversations, they're important to have, which is why we're doing this right now.
Sure, yeah.
And why you just preached this sermon. But like you're sort of working through right now, there are faithful, reasonable Christians, followers of Jesus, who are trying to figure this out, who disagree.
Yes.
Strongly.
Yes.
So these are important conversations to have, but how can we have these conversations? So just give us some practical wisdom on what does that look like? How can we talk about these issues in a way that honors God and loves our neighbors, even in the discussions?
Yeah, man. Now that's the million-dollar question. I mean, if I had that, if I knew the answer to that, Rachel, it'd be like having lightning in a bottle, because it seems like no one can have that right now. Here's how I think. The gospel should bring humility to me. I'm a sinner. I make mistakes. My thoughts aren't always correct. They're probably more incorrect than correct, more times than I would even want to know. But at the same time, we ought to think the best of one another. You know, 1 Corinthians tells us that love believes the best. And I would hope that we could. I love people that have strong convictions. I feel like I have strong convictions, and sometimes I have strong convictions about not having certain convictions on certain things. Like I don't have to take a big stand on this, that, or the other, because I'm still learning. And I think if we would just show the kind of grace to others that Christ has shown to us. I mean, if anyone ought to be irked with the decisions that we've made, it ought to be Jesus, right? I mean, he's perfectly holy and we're not. And yet, God in his mercy shows us grace and charity through his life and death and resurrection. And so I it would just be good. I mean, there's a reason why Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. He's showing us a different kingdom ethic. And we just need to be mindful of that. Far too often, what bothers me when I hear Christians talk in political discourse, we keep talking about demanding our rights. Like, that is not, we speak more like Americans than Christians. And don't get me wrong. I love that I'm an American. I'm grateful that I am. I didn't choose to be. I'm probably more proud that I'm a Texan than I'm an American. That's just because I'm weird, but I love Texas. But I kind of, I'm grateful to be an American. I feel like I feel like I'm a good citizen. And yet at the same time, Jesus is my king. So I want to follow his lead. And when I hear people talk to others in this political arena in such a way where it's uncivil, it's uncharitable, it thinks the worst of people. Those are times where I would want to try to follow Jesus more than anything else, than any other voices. We've got to be able to change that kind of narrative. And again, that's not what makes money. That's not what's attractive. That's not going to give you social media traction. And my fear is what I said in my message is that we've been far too easily discipled by news corporations that have their own political agendas than to be discipled by Jesus and how we respond to people. So if Jesus tells me to love my neighbor as myself, what would that look like when I speak to someone who has a different opinion than I do, different conviction than I do, and they hold theirs firmly, and so do I? Again, how would I want to be treated? It just seems so elementary to me. So if you believed on a issue opposite of what I did, and we wanted to have this, and you're super smart, and you and I could talk about this and get engaged and even be heated about things, Jesus would still say, all right, Yancey, how would you want Rachel to treat you in this? Well, I'd want her to be gracious to me and think the best of me and be honest with me. Well, then, okay, Yancey, then that's how you ought to treat Rachel. I mean, it's not like Jesus makes it rocket science, and yet it's hard for our hearts to do those things. For various kinds of reasons, but that's the kind of discipleship we need. So
So you're saying just post on Facebook?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, you know, even that, we can change the narrative on that. I mean, I love vigorous discussion. I'm not averse to debate. I mean, I actually like those things. When I started in college, I was a political science major. I mean, I was involved politically in high school. I was the leader of a political group in high school. I went to college as a political science major initially. I was involved politically on campus. I served during some campaigns. So I'm all for it. For people that want to do that, I'm great with it. My heart changed quite a bit, to be honest with you, when I felt called to serve vocationally in ministry. And the more I've tried to deepen myself in the gospel, I think my heart's changed all the more. But I do think we ought to change it kind of a narrative, and I'm very well acquainted with it. I mean, my brother is a U.S. congressman, and that's not a secret. So my brother just texted me the other day. He was on Air Force One, so he gets to walk the corridors of power. I'm pretty closely associated with, I mean, via my family through politics with that. So I know what that's like a little bit. I know what the conversations are like, and I just want to be a faithful Jesus follower, And I do think part of what it is to be faithfully following Jesus is not what you think in your head, but what comes out of your mouth. And, you know, they will know we are Christians by our love, that famous song says, but man, that's going to be seen in what we say and how we say it. So I want people to have great convictions and have animated conversations. But if we could, if just think about this, if people at Clear Creek Community Church were known for the charity of their discussions, man, that would make a dent in a world that's very uncharitable right now.
Well, let me ask you just one question about that, because you talked in your sermon and right now about the media, how we have to just acknowledge that there is bias in the media.
Oh, for sure.
There is a such thing as fake news, whatever you think that is. Yep. I mean, we know there's foreign countries who are infiltrating, you know, different systems.
Yep.
So how can we be wise Christians and try to understand the issues at hand?
That's such a great question.
And still be, you know, aligned with the kingdom of God.
Yep.
How do we do that? Do you have any practical advice?
Yeah, I don't know how practical. Yes, I do. It's not easy. I do think so. What I said in the message was almost every, but I think every news organization is really for the most part, and the more popular they are, this is for sure true, they're not really about giving you the news. They're about giving you their opinions of the news, their interpretations of the news. So it's like it's almost, think of it for Bible study. So you teach how to study the Bible. You and Aaron have done that. I mean, you want people to interpret the data. You don't interpret it for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that happens at some level. I do that when I preach, right? But if all you ever do is have someone interpret things for you, then you're kind of at their mercy. That's not just biblically. That's also with the information we get. So if all you get is news from one source, just know that source has stacked its deck towards some kind of political bias. Most of the time it's intentional. Sometimes it's not, but you can't help your biases to help your biases to affect you, right? So what I've tried to do, what I've tried to tell people to do, you can even go online and look at a continuum politically of the news sources that are out there. Those that are far right, those that are far left, and then everything that's kind of on the continuum in between. What I try to do is I try to read from multiple sources on multiple places on the continuum. So what that means practically is I read liberal stuff. Excuse me. I read news that's been interpreted by liberals. I read news that's been interpreted by conservatives. And I expose myself to different streams. And here's what's fascinating.
Sounds like a lot of effort.
It is. It takes work. But again, do you want to eat yourself, or do you want someone to spoon feed you? And if you want someone to spoon feed you, that's fine. Spoon feed you, that's fine. It's just what happens though is you'll tend to just live in a cul-de-sac ideologically that you'll never get out of, and that's how you're going to see the world. And it probably will lead you, or probably, maybe I should say this, it might lead you into being a political idolater. Because you've just drunk one stream the whole time, and that's how the world is, when maybe it could be something different than that. So, but you'll never know unless you hear the other side. And so that's just, we don't want to even hear the other side anymore. So I try to hear multiple sides of certain issues. I mean, it's amazing. Just this week, and if you know, people who are my friends on Facebook, you know, as a pastor, I got a bazillion of them. And I got people dyed blue Democrats and people dyed red Republican. I mean, right next to each other on my feed, and I love them all. But sports came back this week, a couple of weeks ago, I should say. And one guy posts, "See, no one's watching sports. Look at the data. No one's watching sports because they didn't stand for the national anthem." That's what they posted, and I'm not lying. The next post was someone from the other side. Look at the data. Largest opening for baseball that they've had in years, watching the Nationals-Yankees game. Well, which is it? Is it the most or is it the worst? And so, well, it depends on what you want to do with the data.
Both right.
Now, you know as well as I do, that same kind of bifurcation happens with masks or no masks. What do we do with the virus or not? I mean, it's just people circling their wagons around their own way to do stuff, and they're just going to find data that fits their narrative. That's what media companies do. That's how they make their money. So I think the harder, sorry, this is a long-winded answer. I just got through preaching, so my brain's a little lazy. I apologize.
You're excited.
But it really does take work, and so I would say pick several streams and see what these several streams say, and then make your own decision. You may still be as conservative or as liberal on the backside of that, but at least you've tried to honestly. I mean, part of it is just, again, go back to giving people the benefit of the doubt, thinking maybe these people are trying to do the best they can with what they have, and here's what they've said about this. Okay, cool. Well, then just listen to them along the spectrum, and then make your own decision. I just want to help people understand that if you're only drinking out of one place, there's a danger in that, because then you're at their mercy. And so I think Christians ought to listen to different streams and be beholden to none, only to Jesus.
So you've talked about how politics is part of all of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not separate from our faith. It's just part of our life, and hopefully part of ushering in the kingdom of God. Excuse me. So is there a way to invest in that, not just emotionally? That's what I hear you saying. Tell me if I'm wrong or not. Emotionally, not just this is what is right and wrong or this is my people, but also with your time and with your intellect, and invest in it in all these other ways too.
Yeah. So, excuse me. I'm drinking water because I just preached and I drank it too fast. So forgive me, y'all, for coughing in everyone's ears. But let me just say this. If political simply means pertaining to the governance of the civic life of a community for its common good, then there's so much more that is political than just what happens in D.C. So, I mean, I mentioned this in my message. You know, Rachel, if you wanted to jump on your local PTA board, and I know that you're a reader, so maybe use this illustration. If you're like, I'm going to be on the library board. Or I got a buddy of mine who's on I use this illustration too, or use this example. He's with the Gulf Coast Marine Conservationists. They want to make sure that the fish in the bay stay the fish in the bay. And they're actually a bunch of fishermen, which, by the way, people don't know this. Hunters, believe it or not, are sometimes the greatest conservationists. I mean, I know that doesn't sound like the narrative that gets pushed a lot, and I'm not trying to say right or wrong. I'm just saying that's also a political thing. So what I want to tell people is, what do you think is the best way to impact your world for the common good? And that might be like, listen, man, I want to do this, that, or the other. And they're not like elected positions. It's just you serving. So in a sense, like when we go out and clean up the bay, when we went to help schools clean up those schools, it was political, not in the way everyone wants to define it, but in the way that we wanted to help the civic life of our community. I mean, schools are a secular institution, but we went out there and we cleaned up their schools. We cleaned up their flower beds because we felt like that was bringing, that would help, that's going to help the common good. In that sense, it's political. And so what I'm trying to argue is, if you look at what it means definition wise, let's just expand it. So politics isn't something we just are afraid of, or only a few jump into the fray. It's like, no, man, the political life of a person is just as important as anything else. They've just got to be able to determine how they want to help their neighborhood, their city, their state, or their nation for the common good and jump in. But I'm serious. I do think it starts really local. That's really the most part of it, you know. So
let me ask you something connected to that.
Yeah.
Because something I hear a lot is, well, if the church would just do its job, which is a little bit what you're talking about, the church would care about adoption.
Yeah.
Or the poor.
Yeah.
Or marriage. Or whatever it, or conservation, whatever it is, then there would be no need for government. Mm-hmm. So get rid of the government. And let's have the church just do its job. And in some sense, that's right, right? Jesus will come back and there will be no separation of kingdom values and the government. But what about now?
No.
How do we think about that?
No, we need a government. We need a government. I'll say it again. We need a government. You're right. When Jesus comes back, but what's Jesus doing when he comes back? He's reestablishing a government under him. That's the truest theocracy that'll ever be. He comes back as king. But until then, we need governments. God gives us governments. What we see in Romans chapter 13. We see that in 1 Peter. He gives governments for the common good. Can they get sideways? Yep. Can they do things badly? Sure. Because they're full of sinful people too. But we don't need to be under the illusion that the church should do everything. No, my gosh. That's like to say that the church is the only God-ordained institution that there is. It's the ultimate institution that we have here that represents God's kingdom. But there's the institution of marriage. I mean, that doesn't just apply to Christians. There's also the institution of government. Again, Romans 13, human institutions. No, we need them. And I'm grateful that we live in the kind of government that we do have, a republic, a federal republic, a constitutional republic. But I do think there are some overlapping. The church is called to take care of her poor, those who are followers of Jesus. And funny enough, we actually bleed that out into the people around us. We want to see the poor taken care of in our neighborhood, where we live. We want to be a gospel lighthouse. You talked about orphanage or orphan care. That's another thing that we're trying to do. Here's what's crazy. I mean, and we have to do that in concert, in cooperation with government policies. but I, I,
So we should. That really is. Well, a question. I think there's
a sure. There's as much as we can, and then there's times where we're not going to be able to. So I think if the church is following Jesus, there's going to be a lot of times when the surrounding culture is applauding us. Hey, you guys take care of the poor really well. Hey, I see what you guys do in Galveston. Hey, I see what you guys do in Baycliff at the Lighthouse. Hey, I see what you guys do for orphans here with the sanctuary. And then they're also the next week going to hate us. Hey, I saw that you guys think abortion's evil. Hey, I saw that you guys think that gender should be defined by biology. What's up with that? I'm not too sure I like you guys. So I think following Jesus, and I said this in the message, following Jesus is going to sometimes make you too conservative for your liberal friends. And at times it's probably going to make you too liberal for your ultra conservative friends. Why are you taking care of the poor like that? Why did you talk about immigration? Well, because the Bible's very clear about that. Well, the Bible speaks more about poverty than abortion. Did you know that? Do you know that the Bible speaks? You know that Jesus talked more about poverty than abortion? Now, when I say that, I think abortion's a big issue, right? But I sure think poverty's a big issue too. And they're both moral. So that's why it's all important. And the church needs to teach the truth about those things. And I want to just free people up. Like, I don't want to be the guy that's like, hey, man, I know the right policies for all these things. I like to think I know some of them, but at the same time, I'm like, listen, man, get around God's people, get around God's word, get around Jesus, let the Spirit fill your heart. And then, and we talked about polis, right? So polis is the sphere of this political sphere of a rule and a reign. Listen, just marinate yourself in the ultimate polis of the kingdom of God, and then get sent out as a citizen of this earthly kingdom, if you will, called the United States, and be a good citizen for the common good, and make decisions and vote your conscience based on that. That's what I think that's what I think the church plays to its strengths. Listen, we're going to be around a lot longer than any nation. God's people will last forever, and yet the nation that we're in, we ought to serve well. And I'll say it once again, I'm grateful to be in the nation that God has given us in the United States. And yet, I don't think anyone would say it's a perfect nation. It doesn't need to have things that it needs to fix. It for sure does, but so does every nation. But ultimately, I'm not taking my cues from, I'm taking my cues from a king and a kingdom. And so should we all.
Let me ask you a question about that. Because a lot of what you talked about in your sermon insofar is sort of the smaller polis.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, locally, yeah, the local library, yeah. Fishermen.
Kind of the city polis, or the polis, regional polis.
And yeah. Then up to nation. But what about the global polis? I mean, how do we think about, as Christians who are part of a universal church,
yeah,
and who love our country,
yeah,
and are grateful for our country,
sure,
and who go to the Olympics and want our country to win?
I tear up every time I see the stars
country.
And stripes when they get up and we win gold.
That's
it chokes
right.
me up every time.
And it's good.
Yeah.
And we love our country. But at the same time, how do we, you know, not think of ourselves as superior,
yeah,
to other people around the world and still have a global church mindset? What does that look like?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I think everyone in their heart and their head has an order of identities. And one being the highest and go, you know, just keep, they descend. So, you know, your identities is Rachel. I know that you're a wife, you're a mom, you're a, you know, a sister, you're a, you know, whatever it is. You've got all these identities.
That's it.
No, there's more. There's more. Maybe I'll speak for me. I'm a husband. I'm a
joking.
Brother. I'm
I am
a son.
Things.
I'm a, and then we have occupational identities, right? Like I'm a pastor, whatever. And all those things influence us. Part of our identity is our nationality. I'm an American, right? And I've told you, I love Texas. I probably get more geeked out about Texas talk than the United States. So like, I really love that I'm and grateful that I'm a Texan, right? That's a part of my identity. All those things influence us. They tutor how we think, feel, and act. But the higher you go, the more important it is. I think what happens far too often is some people have switched American with Christian. That they're more excited about being an American than they are about being a Christian. And it's really bad when they conflate the two. Like, you know, if I'm an American, that means I'm a Christian, which that's I mean, just we got to stop that kind of thinking. They're different, right? what we ought to remind ourselves is, no matter what identity we are, our chief identity is that we're followers of Jesus, that Christ is our identity. And so when Christ is our identity, what does that mean? Well, if I'm a part of Christ and his people, that's a global people. That's not just a global people. That's not just a people in time. It's a people throughout time. I mean, it's a synchronic and diachronic, just to use some fancy terms that just pop in my head. I mean, I'm a part of a people that have a solidarity around the globe and throughout time, known as the people of God, that started with Adam and Eve and worked through Abraham and then Moses and then David with Israel, and then now has progressed to the Church of Jesus Christ. That identity in Jesus and that association with his people, that's my chief identity, and we've got to keep that in mind, because in doing so, it gives us a global mindset. I'll be honest with you. I have more solidarity and stuff in common with an African Christian than I do with someone who's an American who's not a believer. Now, I have a lot in common with an American who's not a believer. Don't get me wrong. But I've got more in common with someone who lives in Africa who's a follower of Jesus. He is my brother. If it's a girl, she's my sister. They're family members purchased by the blood of Christ. My ultimate allegiance is to Jesus and to them. And so that's why I get junked up still when I see believers persecuted around the world today. And don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't have compassion for the ills that we have in America. I do. But I get junked up, maybe even more so at times, when I see what happens to people all across the world that are followers of Jesus, because ultimately that's my people. And when I die, if the Lord doesn't come back in my lifetime, when I die and Christ returns and the new kingdom will be here, it will not be defined by Americans or Russians or Africans. It will be defined of all those people who have come together in the name of Jesus, that have a new name under a new people with a new king. I think we just have to remember who we are in Jesus, and that stays number one. And again, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I think getting around God's people, getting mm-hmm. around God's word, being around God's worship, those are kind of those are practices. Let me kind of digress for 1 second. You can call me back in if I need to. But we do things in America to remind us that we're Americans. I mean, there is politics mm-hmm. in our religion and religion in our politics. When we stand at the Pledge of Allegiance and we put our hand over our heart and recite that pledge, we're reciting an allegiance to the state. When we sing a national anthem, listen to this, man. What else do you sing about? You're singing your allegiance to a state. We have icons and rituals, standing and sitting. In fact, this whole idea of this political stuff where people are kneeling, it messes a lot of people up. Why? Because it strikes at what we think is not showing devotion to the state. Listen to the words I'm using. Devotion, icons, rituals. That's religious language. And we do that. I mean, we go to football games, right? And we fly like F-14s and F-16s in formation over with red, white, and blue going. You know, we combine sports and the military somehow. I don't know how that even supposed to fit, but somehow it does. And we the rumble goes over the stadium. We get a little thump in our, a lump in our throat, and our heart beats faster, and we're proud to be Americans and all that kind of stuff, right? Those are rituals that form our actions, thoughts, and habits. That's just what people do to change your life. The church does the same thing. You come into the body of Jesus, and we come gathered together in worship, and you have confession and God's response of forgiveness spoken over you because of the blood of Christ for you. You take through the ritual, and use that word, of the Lord's Supper, being reminded that your true bread is not what you eat on your plate, the life and death of Jesus and his resurrection. We pray and we bow our heads and we go through the ritual physically of acknowledging God's sovereign. We're basically, what the church does is it moves its people, if you will, through the same kinds of things. It is It is the ritual to remind us and to recenter us that our kingdom ultimately is one of the Lord's, and that all the things that we do, prayer, sermon, song, confession, giving, all this stuff is, I think, practices to train our hearts once again and to remind our hearts once again about who we are and of whose we are, and whose we are, I should say. And so that's why you talk about, like, how can we have a more global mindset? How can we think more Christianly? How can we have a better view that impacts our politics to love other people as we'd want to be loved, to care for other people as we'd want to be cared for, to love our neighbor as ourselves? To me, it's like, dude, get your tail into the assembly of God's people and go through those same practices, those rituals, if you will, that train your head and your heart and your hands of what it is to live for the kingdom. Hmm. Dang, I wish I could have said that in my sermon.
Everyone listen. So that is, that was so good, so helpful. What do we do when our identity and our ritual and our practices as Christians butts up against our practices as Americans? So you mentioned people get frustrated when someone kneels.
Some do, quite a few do.
During the national anthem because it's about the devotion to our country.
Yeah.
So as Christians, how do we think about civil disobedience? So Representative John Lewis just passed away.
Sure, and man.
However you feel about his politics, people appreciate what he did for the civil rights.
Both sides have celebrated him. I mean, Republicans and Democrats have celebrated John Lewis. You were way to work through that. We're safe to say he has been lauded.
He's been lauded
for his contribution for the common good.
Right. And one thing, a quote that I love that people have been putting out there is make good trouble.
Make good trouble.
Man. And so as Christians, how do we do that? What does good trouble look like if we say, so the government is a gift from God, it's for the common good.
Yeah.
We want to be obedient whenever the government is supporting people and persecuting injustice. So what if we feel like it's not as Christians? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, that's so good. I wish I knew that answer. I don't have a good answer for that. I do think this. I think you're right. Is there a place for civil disobedience in the government? Well, first of all, yes, because I believe constitutionally we're allowed to do that. And peacefully assembling. I mean, I've heard that from both sides. Now, they're going to argue what is considered peaceful or what protest would count or not, but that is the right for Americans to protest. What about Christians?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, let's apply a kingdom ethic to that. I think where the government upholds the virtues of the kingdom in a way that benefits the common good, we ought to be as devoted citizens as we possibly can. Wherever we feel like that's not happening, that's where we can be involved politically. As your conscience dictates, I want you all to keep hearing that, man, as your conscience dictates, because I don't want to, I'm not trying to say everyone needs to do the same thing. And there may be places where, what if the government gets so sideways in certain areas that because of the power structures, voting's not going to be the way that happened. They've got to hear a voice of the underrepresented. Well, then I think there's places for that. I don't know the best way to do it, but here's what I'm going to do. Who knows if this is even helpful for people. I'm going to give a recommendation of a book that I know you have read and that I have read, and I want to caveat it before I do. There is a group called the AND Campaign who, from what I understand, may hold they're followers of Jesus who've gotten tired of the left, right, and they're trying to find what, you know, is there more of a middle that we can do in a way that we can be gracious and all this kind of stuff. And they come from all kinds of political persuasions, from the left and the right, but they've tried to meet in the middle to say, hey, is there a way to have, if you will, a godly civil disobedience or a godly way to change the political narrative and the political story and the political talk? And I read this book a few days ago. Rachel, you probably read it a week before me. And I think there are some positions they take that I don't know if I would hold to those positions. But you know what? That's okay. What I want to recommend is the book. And the book is called, off the top of my head, I think it's called like Courage and Compassion or Conviction and Compassion. Conviction and Compassion. Conviction and Compassion. I don't know the names of the authors. Do you know the names off the top of your head?
I do not.
It's by the AND Campaign. Now again,
we can link to it.
Yeah. Let me just caveat it again. I don't know officially if they're like their official positions are ones that I would hold. There may be ones I would disagree with. I don't know. But I want to tell you this. The reason I want to recommend the book is they actually give practical suggestions for how they believe believers, how they believe Christians and followers of Jesus can engage the civic life, where it may entail a protest, a peaceful protest. It may entail lobbying your congressman, and not in a professional lobby kind of way, but just kind of trying to make things happen in the political structures that we've been given in a way that honors Jesus, that shows charity and civility. And I read that, and I'm just telling you as your teaching pastor, I thought overall it was such a solid effort for practical wisdom that for those of you that really want to engage it, again, I'm not trying to endorse the whole group. I thought the book was very helpful. Rachel, I'm going to give you a chance. What did you think?
Well, just for how, I think more than even what, maybe what they end up saying sometimes, I think the how to engage in politics and faith, they're so helpful and thoughtful.
Yeah. So again, that to me had some very practical wisdom. We'll link it at the end of this. You guys know how we do it. And, I just thought it was super helpful. You know, if you go look on their website, maybe they're a part of some causes I would probably want to have nothing to do with. I don't even know if I would or wouldn't. I just know I thought that book was super helpful for practical information for believers that want to engage that process in a way that honors Jesus and the gospel.
Let me ask you one more question.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up. So you spoke a lot in your sermon, and we've talked a lot about how to love your neighbor as yourself.
Yep.
So the great commandment is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Part of our church's mission is the Great Commission.
Yeah.
Go and make disciples.
Absolutely.
Teaching them everything I've taught you. So sometimes whenever we're talking about politics, those two things are juxtaposed, mm-hmm. or they're in competition, mm-hmm. or one subsumes the other. Mm-hmm. How can we think about those two things together? Are they connected?
I think they're connected. Ultimately, because we are a missionary people. We're missionary people. But how do we do mission? Well, we should do mission by being a winsome, still one of my favorite words in the world, winsome, a winsome gospel presence. How has Clear Creek become a winsome gospel presence? Well, it's when our people, it's when you and I and everybody else that follows Jesus lives. This is the Sermon on the Mount, you know, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Like we live righteous lives, not self-righteous lives, but lives given to Jesus that are so winsome in how we love other people and how we treat others. We're going to run across people that don't believe in Jesus. I hope we run across a lot of them that don't hold your views. They don't hold your political views. They don't hold your sexual ethic views. They may be the complete polar opposite. One of the guys on my top five list is an atheist. He is opposite of me in so many ways. But where he and I are the same is, well, I wouldn't even say he and I are the same. He's probably better at this than I am. He's very compassionate. He's very loving. He's a justice oriented guy. Listen, he and I can share the table on those things. And I want to be for justice, and I want to be for compassion. And so I can meet him there, and I can not just meet him there. I can try to show him that what drives my desire to see injustice corrected and to see the sick healed and to see poverty eradicated isn't just because I want to help other people. Although I think it's wonderful to help other people. It's because I have a king who has commanded me to do what's best for my neighbor as I would want for me. And again, if I were struggling with poverty, I'd want someone to help me. And that may be helping me help myself. I'm not arguing I'm just saying I want to fix those things, right? Because we ultimately serve a king who's bringing a kingdom of shalom, of wholeness and peace. And any time that we can show people what wholeness looks like, then we can tell them why that we believe that. So I want us engaged in all. I mean, it may open up our. I would think it would open up our evangelism, not squash it. It would open up the bandwidth on the things that we do, being mindful the whole time that we're not doing it just for justice or for poverty or for orphans or, you know, whatever you want to put it in. I'm not the YMCA. I'm a part of the Church of Jesus Christ. That ultimately, what I want to do is I understand that God didn't just come for you to make right decisions. He came to redeem you, man. He came to redeem you, and that means He wants you soul and body as a part of His kingdom. And that comes when you give your life and heart to Jesus Christ and His sacrificial atoning death for you. So, I think they go hand in hand. We can separate them. I think that would be unfortunate. The gospel should drive everything, including, as I've said, our political life. And that's a challenge, but it's one we ought to be up for, especially now with November rolling around. And we're going to be hearing all kinds of messages. The message we need to be listening to first and foremost is the one that comes from the lips of our King. That's who our ultimate allegiance is to.
That's a good word. We'll make sure that we link to who Yancey is voting for.
Yeah, Waylon and Willie. Hey, listen, they're just some good old boys, right? Come on now.
Yancey, for real, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, this was great.
The sermon was great. If you did not listen to the sermon, hopefully you can go back and do that. Hopefully you listen to it before you.
It won't even make sense what I'm talking about if you didn't do that. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here for both.
Thanks, Rachel.
They're hard conversations, but they're ever present and important, and we're grateful. So thank you guys for listening today too. I hope this helps all of us to frame all these conversations with love and humility and a united purpose for Christ and His kingdom. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes. And if you want to check out other resources, Yancey will link to some with this podcast, and we'll also have other things like stories, articles, podcasts at clearcreekresources.org. I'm Rachel Chester. Thanks so much.